Secret Council 10 are the dudes what run the world?
It's a complex form of running the world. It's paramedia in technique.
Why do you say paramedia?
If you read McLuhan's Understanding Media, which came out in 1964, he inventories 26 media, and each one's a category: the printed book, the spoken word, the typewriter, the phonograph, the telephone. Mm-hmm. Separate media creating separate environments. Once we've had the digital era over the last 10 years, your cell phone contains television, radio, newspapers. Your iPhone contains the internet. In other words, my phone is not something stuck in the wall and is a telephone per se. Mm-hmm. It's mixed media. So it's a seamless web of former McLuhan categories. Mm-hmm. Movie, TV, separate things. TV was a chunk of furniture in your living room. Mm-hmm. Now, all media being seamless, so para means above, below, beside, inside, outside.
It does.
So paramedia means it's around the concept of the media. Now, the media, since the 60s, is what everybody has been calling the bugaboo. The media says this, the media does that, as if the media was some separate entity out there doing things to us. Most people probably meant the news. Actually, the media, this convergence that people talked about as if it was externalized, was what I call the Android meme. So I'm talking about media, which I say, as it got more converged in the 90s, became what I call the Android meme. Automatic,
meme
self-replicating.
Like a genetic thing, only cultural.
Cultural habit. It's
passed
on.
Like a gene in genetics, but a meme is like a cultural thing that's passed on.
So Android implies a self-replicating, robotic, angelic turnover.
Angelic?
I don't mean there's bad angels and good angels.
Oh, why angelic?
Because an angel can be anywhere it wants. Shows up and then goes somewhere else. So with the modern electronic media like the telephone, the cell phone, the iPhone, when you use a telephone, the sender was sent to whoever you called, and they're transported to you. So that's angelic. It's not just two-way, it's multi-way. Mm-hmm. Then you're a super angel, where you're everywhere at once, rather than going here, and then there, and then another place. You're automatically everywhere at once. So I'm saying angel, but the robotic implies super angel. The point is that's the Android meme. It's a super angelic, robotic, self-replicating apparatus. When you get into the digital era, they evaporate the TV as a separate piece of furniture. They evaporate the telephone as a separate...
What do you mean, evaporate?
It's not there. You don't have to go to the room where the TV set is.
Because it's on your iPhone.
It's like it goes with you.
Yeah.
So it's miniaturized and evaporated.
Right.
In that situation, the media as a category melts away. So para means your...
The old media.
Yeah, the old categories.
And it becomes subsumed by the new emerging ones.
So the media word now means the Android meme. It subconsciously was the reference from 1960 up till last decade. So media, for me, means Android meme. But now, as the Android meme shrinks and becomes seamless and almost difficult to find its boundaries, it's inside you, and you're moving around it with more autonomy.
How did it get inside you?
By shrinking. Literally goes inside.
Well, they're going to have computers. They're going to be molecular.
And I'm saying that's already happening with the Android meme. The effects precede the causes. The actual molecular nanoform, television goes inside you.
So what do you mean television goes inside you?
If you look at you go to the cinema and you see a movie, the projecting light used to hit off the screen and come back and go into your eyes.
That's right.
So it bounced off. McLuhan called it light off or light on, bouncing off. Mm-hmm. But the old television with the cathode ray tube would send beams into you and into your gut, and then you'd have to take the little pixels and remake an image. You actually made the image because it just sent dots at you. Mm. So it goes through your eye into your central nervous system, and you go inside the beam. So where are you on the beam? So the cathode ray beam, you might as well say it's inside you as well as you being inside it.
Uh-huh.
The boundaries melt. That was McLuhan's definition. Mm. So with the movie camera, the viewer is the camera when you're watching movies. Mm. But he said with television, the viewer is the screen. Mm. You are the screen. And where does the screen begin? It begins back inside the set with the cathode ray emanation, radiation or beaming. Mm. But that looks like it's outside of you. Now, when you disappear, I don't have to have a box to look at a TV. I just press this little thing, my little iPhone, and there's the TV apparatus inside. So the para is the fact as these former telephone, automobiles, TV, cinema, these huge environments shrink down, it makes the user bigger. I'm walking around my TV. I'm walking around. I'm existing around my telephone because it's all
inside. Around your cell phone.
Yeah, because it's inside here. Mm-hmm. I had to walk over there to get the telephone before. So this seamless web of the Android meme, the converged media, I call paramedia because you are above, below, and beyond it and underneath and inside it. So that's what the word paramedia means.
How long were we in living in an Android meme condition?
When Sputnik went up in 57, there's this apparatus. Then the Americans countered within a year with their satellites. Yeah. And then gradually the satellites started to rotate around the planet. So McLuhan said that satellite environment, which was a not noticed really, the effects of it environment, right? Not noticed, it's always invisible, the new thing. Yeah. So what happened to Earth that everybody thought they were living inside of? Planet Earth was now inside another man-made, human-made environment. So Earth became a divine image and archetype, and ecology was born. So why did people be so unaware of industrial pollution, you know, back in the 40s, 30s, and the 19th century? It became an assumption after Rachel Carson, and then by the late 60s, ecology and Earth Day shows up in 1970.
I did a perceptual
relationship to the image of Earth, the natural artifact, natural habitat, was changed by satellite. But to move on, so the satellite is creating this ring of satellites and creating the planet and its former media like TV, radio, bulldozers, ships, and whatever, newspapers, they become the content of the satellite environment. So they become actors on the stage that this satellite environment created. So the actors in the 60s, 70s were the old media environment, separate media, newspaper, television, radio, architecture, skyscrapers, all media, all things that humans make. But in 1960, they started to, up in MIT, to invent the digital environment. And so from 1960 to 1990, the global theater of acting media forms started to converge and get smaller. Converge and get smaller. Haven't got to the iPhone level, but it's starting to. In the 70s, you had VCRs. You could record programs. You didn't have to watch the program at the same time as everybody else. So the individual has more sense of autonomy in relation to the older media.
Now,
in terms of what
the word
you can,
ecology.
Well, McLuhan shows up in 1953 with his journal explorations, but that very year, we in the Secret Council 10 gave the CIA the option to create and use that word, and they created the Human Ecology Foundation, which was an MK-Ultra mind control operation.
I don't know what MK-Ultra mind control
LSD, weird programming, hypnosis, a way to create zombie agents, you know, the Manchurian Candidate scenario. Well, part of that secret project was called the Human Ecology Group.
And who was that run by? The Secret Council?
Ostensibly by the CIA, but we in the Secret Council 10 gave it the go-ahead. We have the shrinking of the global media actors inside the satellite proscenium arch, okay, around the planet. The effect of that interplay, that tactile interplay of the different environments.
Tactile not being necessarily touch, but interval recognition.
Touching and letting go. You could say it's a sixth sense, the interplay sense. Mm-hmm. So as these global environments interplayed and shrunk, the effect of that was like a hologram. People were living in a converged image before the actual hologram showed up. So the hologram is what we're living in from 1960 to 1990. And the hologram is shrinking as the digital media gets more and more powerful. So the hologram has shrunk so much, it's gone inside us, and me with my iPhone or whatever other modern gadget I have autonomy and can play and mutate that, and I can edit that hologram. Okay, McLuhan said we must anticipate what the effects are going to be. And it's actually not that hard if you know how to look. So the effects of the hologram, which has, you know, someday we'll be able to project, you know, Harold will project himself into my room.
It'll end up hologram,
McLuhan would say the effects of that new invention are already here. Because the effects precede the actual invention, which he called the causes.
That's really funny. You got a looking glass time.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, we and the Secret Council 10, which was formed after World War II, because obviously the Americans were going to set up the United Nations and become a global corporation. Rockefeller set up 700 corporations called the World Commerce Corporation, and that got the economy going.
Rockefeller?
Nelson and David. They got the economy going.
Yeah.
I mean, they babysat Germany and babysat Japan for five or six, ten
Marshall
years.
Marshall Plan helped.
Yeah, Marshall Plan was the beginning of it. But the point is, it was a global village and becoming a global corporation.
He was the first one to coin that, I think, McLuhan.
Yeah, he got it from Wyndham Lewis.
He did, okay.
Yeah, who was a big influence on James Joyce. I don't know if I've ever said that on your show before. Nope. Finney's Wake is an argument with Lewis. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Okay.
So in the 50s, the elite, the Fondi, the oligarch, out of your...
The Bilderbergers?
Yeah, that's a front for them.
Yeah.
The historical wealth of the last 300, 400
the
years.
Loons, yeah.
They saw that you didn't need to implement a world government technically, like George Orwell feared, the 1984 thing. It was already an environmental fact with television. But what was coming was the satellite environment, and they could see that. So actually, you're off the planet. So the Secret Council 10 said, well, we need to anticipate the effects of the satellite
now,
environment.
Wait a minute. The Secret Council 10, they are people who run the world.
They're people who sit on the former bureaucracy that ran the world before World War II. The 1984 world that Orwell describes is 1934. Three divisions, three-part organized world, supposedly 1984, but that's the way it was in 1934. Huxley's Brave New World is better dealing with the 60s and 70s than 1984, which if you think of it as 1948, you see why it isn't, because he doesn't see the effects of television and decentralized TV. And I was just a young assistant or intern in the Secret Council 10 in the 50s. I mean, I grew up with my father and his network, all right?
And he was involved as a butler to the Fondi.
To the Fondi, yeah.
Yeah.
Very
and
involved.
And that being the Fondi's old money Europe.
Yeah, old Gutenberg class.
Yeah.
The class, the elite of the Gutenberg money system,
just
which had collapsed in 29.
Was there a connection between that Fondi in terms of money terms and the aristocratic thing of the dynastic states and so forth?
Turned in taxes. The family turned in taxes. They set up the postal system in 1500. That was a new medium. And so they developed great wealth controlling the intelligence maneuvering around the postal system.
Okay, I didn't mean to interrupt this.
Secret Council 10.
You're literally talking about 10 individual people.
No, it's about 40 people. There were 10 representatives of four. So there are 40. Every four people had a representative. So there's 10 fours, so you get a council of 10. You follow that? So 10 members representing 40 people.
Do they have elections, or how are they selected, or how is it done?
No, it was passed down.
It was passed
on.
Down.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, to the popular mind, you could think of it as the central bankers or the Illuminati, but it's not just the bankers, it was the lawyers, because a trust fund, a fondue, or fondo, singular, is it's a bank account, let's say. And the members that get to use it are temporary. And the bank account continues through the generations so that the members who use it, they can be off if they are rude with the way they do it or get out of hand. They can be off. And the thing is, the lawyers preserve the
killed,
bank account.
Killed.
Or poisoned.
Has it been known to happen?
Many times.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, so the point is that the nest egg of wealth carries on like a medium centuries.
Right.
That's the private ownership of money. In the 30s, money became public property. And that was the New Deal. That was fascism or socialism or communism, where the average person was guaranteed money as a ticket to live. They didn't live in the country anymore. They lived in industrial cities. So they needed a piece of paper to function.
Yeah.
So everybody was given a piece of paper. So we call that the movement of money becoming public property. So that's in the 30s. Then it becomes credit after World War II.
Money becoming private property.
Public property, the welfare state. In different political forms,
Remnants
in different cultures.
That.
So after the World War II, we start to move into a pre-digital. But it's a computerized economy, and it's called the credit card, where people were given not a piece of paper, but a credit card. And if you kept that in order and your prestige well-balanced, you could function, and you could operate in debt. So anyways, since money was not the controlling medium anymore in the 40s and 50s, information was. And anticipating the effects of new technologies, which were information landscapes, a technology brings in a whole new informative situation. It re-informs us. Right? Inform. It re-informs us. The Secret Council 10, the only power they had, and we had, was to anticipate the effect.
You're an association with the Secret Power 10, yourself personally.
I eventually was on it.
Okay.
In the 70s. But what happened is I'm just working for it and aware of its maneuverings in the 50s and 60s. But the point is that it's not a group that is doing business. They're monitoring the effects of new environments, new technology, see what it does to their investments. All right? Simple anticipation. But very knowledgeable. They had a good understanding.
I would expect so. They probably had a lot of retainers that were pretty knowledgeable also.
Without the retainers knowing it. They studied Finnegan's Wake and Ezra Pound and Eliot and Wyndham Lewis because they saw those poets were studying the effects of new media. So they learned techniques from them. Mm-hmm. My father used to read Finnegan's Wake before it was published, when it was in serial form in Transistor magazine, and he would read it out to me. And eventually he called me Tim Finnegan, because Finnegan's Wake is based on the ballad of Tim Finnegan.
So you were raised on Finnegan's Wake?
Yes, yeah. And I met James Joyce, Ezra Pound, T.S. Eliot, when I met them all. I was young. I even met Hitler. My father took me to a meeting in October 1936. I didn't know the meaning of these people. Mm-hmm. I was 14. I didn't fully know what they were all about. All I know is when I was in Hitler's office, it was very cold, or some kind of psychic coldness, so people would say, well, you picked up the evil. Maybe that's what it was, but that's what I remember. It was a weirdly cold room. But anyways, the point is I met these people, but later, after World War II, I was drawn into it because the network of this oligarch was very tiny by that point. They'd been sitting on the sidelines from 1930 up to 1957.
All through this welfare phase.
Yes, exactly, which collapses in the late 70s. It collapses because the American wealthy lent out all their money around the world. It was called AID, aid, remember? Foreign aid?
Yeah, but,
and they built up a lot of countries in the 50s and 60s. There was basic development of industry in the third world, rudimentary level.
Far ahead of us.
If you think of the placid images that the United Nations used to put out of our world in the 50s and 60s, that was caused by the American wealth being distributed. But the problem was is that they lent it out, and when computer speeds in the late 70s had reached the speed of light or the speed of thought, the whole money system collapsed and the loans could not be returned. So the Rockefellers were bankrupt. The oligarchy never lend money out. They only invest, and so they're not going to lose. So in the early 80s, the Fondi were brought in under the guise of Prince Charles and Lady Di. They were brought in to prop up the virtual economy that comes in 83 after the Depression in the early Reagan era. So the Secret Council 10 is monitoring this situation all the time, okay?
This is not one that usually comes up. Very often you hear Illuminati, you hear Bilderberg, you hear Trilateral, you hear Davos and that, but you don't hear Secret Council 10 except from the lips of Bob Dobbs.
Yeah, because they weren't called the Secret Council 10. That's my term.
Did they have any
No. They just had each other's phone number. Just a bunch of phone numbers.
Were those numbers listed?
No, they're very secret.
Just wondered,
I mean, they could have conference calls. They get together sometimes, very informal. It's just like a group of mafia guys getting together. The commission, the five mafia families, right?
Would
they get
together. Would they have been seen as illegitimate in any of the so-called legitimate chambers? Or
no,
anything?
Because...
Judiciary, Interpol, or anything? Or nothing like that?
The Johnny-come-latelys, like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, they would encounter these people at a certain point in their own growth, and they would recognize, oh, they got there before us. Mm-hmm. And so they would get along with them, and everything was okay.
Anything comparable over on the Asian side of the planet?
Yes. There's a name I refer to, often mention, as Romanov. Not the Romanov family that was set up the Tsarist regime in the 19th century. The same name, but no connection. Romanov is the controller of Asia. He's the one who brought in Gorbachev.
Is or was?
Yeah, it's not. It's a was now, because nobody knows. Nobody controls. See, what happened when I took over the Secret Council 10 in February 1988, we're talking about the Tom Dobbs scenario in the movie, Robin Williams movie, Man of the Year. So Tom Dobbs' scenario, Man of the Year, where he uses a computer accident, glitch, or maybe sympathy with the Android meme. Tom Dobbs' movie almost shows the Android meme supporting him and makes him president, and he didn't even know he was going to be president, okay? That happened with me in 88. And when I became chairman of Secret Council 10, by 1990, I dismantled it because the Android meme was the main factor, and we didn't need to anticipate that anymore. It was on its own. Okay? So the Android meme, I'm telling you, is built from 60 to 90, and we in the Secret Council 10 nursed it and followed it and matured it and reacted to it and anticipated its effects. But then from 90 to 2000, the Android meme is over. It's dead. We have the after image. And what's sneaking up is what I call the AP, the anthropomorphic physical, the original body that all these media were extension of. This thing.
Uh-huh.
whatever it's made up of.
Is that coming to some sort of an end time or something, or qualitative transformation, evolution of consciousness,
yes,
or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
This gets into your date, October 12th.
We're now,
October 12th, 1970. You go to Harold's website, you can read about October 12th, 1970. Mm. It's a particularization of Bucky's vision, Bucky Fuller's vision.
Fuller. And
the age of scarcity is over, you know, in 1970. Okay, so here we are in the 90s. In the 90s, as the media really shrinks and becomes paramedia, the person has a little now iPhone, and before that the Palm Pilot, these small gadgets, he would feel bigger than these previous environments. When radio came in, that was a huge effect.
Gigantic.
People were inside these things unconsciously. Mm-hmm. Hitler intimidated everybody with his rousing tribal meetings through the broadcast system and radio.
Hot media.
Think of the cool, huge TV and satellite environments. These huge media environments that intimidated people in the 20th century and made them rather passive, you could say. Now people are energized because the media is smaller than them. Those big environments came from this body. So these get tinier and tinier. The thing where all the media came from, were extended from, is sitting here, almost like a caveman again, looking around.
Back in touch with nature. Not necessarily,
because you've got this second nature, this digital multi-bodies, TV body and chip body, which are my terms for those landscapes as they get smaller.
Yeah.
They get attached to our original physical body, and so we have a chip body and TV body. So when I look at you, Harold, I'm not just talking to a chemical body. I'm also looking at someone who's going to look at his cell phone or look at his iPhone. And so I have to deal with your time and displacement of energy for your chip life and for your TV life, like getting on this show and producing the content. So I'm talking not just to the chemical body, but your TV body and your chip body. And I'm doing that with everybody. The juggling of that is the new yoga, which I call paramedia yoga. So as these things disappear, and what they all came from has a bigger sense of superiority compared to all these previous media environments, I call it the return of the anthropomorphic physical, the thing in us that makes us think that we're different from the environment, that we're unique.
Not self-reflective consciousness.
Yeah, that's part of it.
Say that sort of separates us from the rest of the creatures, I would think.
Yeah.
And
here we are, bigger than our media environment. Michael Wolff wrote an article in the December issue of Vanity Fair. December 2007. It's on page 176. It's called Generals, Gadgets, and Gorillas. The age of the media gadget is here, with Apple steamrolling the big distributors. But when consumers have the power to get content anywhere, anytime, for free, even Steve Jobs should be worried. Okay?
Oh.
It's the age of the media gadget. The gadget is the culture. Possibly it's just the age of the iPhone, iPod, iTV, iCar. But I don't think so. I think Steve Jobs and Apple are merely the sharpest promoters of gadgetism. The gadget as accessory is Steve's accomplishment. But fashion and status are only two aspects of the gadget world. At the most recent Allen & Company Media Mogul Conference in Sun Valley, Paul Allen, it was important not just to have an iPhone, but to have been sent one by Steve Jobs himself, and then, giving corporate ethics rules their due, to mention you'd sent him back a personal check. The real point of the gadget, and a reason beyond fashion why people are so proud to display their gadgets, is that it sticks it to some larger, more cumbersome, less responsive media system. The Android meme earlier. Decades ago, the big media environments. It allows the consumer to stick it to some larger, more cumbersome, less responsive media system. A little gadget takes on the big networks, in brackets. So it's a minor irony that guys at the Allen & Company conference, who own the networks, the big cumbersome systems, are gadget crazy. They're actually involved in using instruments that knock out the big guys. A marketer would call this empowerment. As a consumer, you're getting the service you want at the time and place you want it, more cheaply than you could ever have hoped to get it, as well as, often, critical help in stealing the particular service or tune. So it goes on to describe the effect of media shrinking and the consumer being bigger than media. And all we're going to get more and more is gadgets that allow us to steal and have everything so convenient for us that Google is going to try topple Steve Jobs by offering everything for free. Everything. They're going to give it all away for free on a little gadget. So let's relate that to the election. So we've got these older media systems, and they're basically after images now, because the real environment is this Paleolithic me bigger than my bodies.
Paleolithic.
Caveman. Back to nature is what you're kind of thinking.
Old Stone Age.
And so in this age where no media system can dominate in its communication, I say that we're in a post-communication age, and the president the White House's image always mirrors what's going on. Pretty well, the invisible environment is mirrored by the White House. Okay?
Okay.
So we had a president the last 7 years
I know.
Who didn't communicate, didn't bother,
yeah.
indifferent, because he was intuiting that we moved in the post-communication, post-information responding.
Ahead of his time?
Ahead of the citizen, yes.
Yeah.
But in responding to the Secret Council of 10 and our maneuvers, it was the appropriate image for a post-communication situation, which
post-communication.
Was...
Post-communication, you mean the need for any communication?
The need
what?
For connecting with anybody. Bush never connected with anything.
Why,
even it'd be disastrous, he wouldn't show up.
Okay.
But the point is that Y2K was the last gasp of the Android meme saying, we need to buy all these computers to protect us from the crash. Mm. And then Y2K came and nothing happened, showing there was no Android meme. So where were we? We were in the 2000, we were into the retrieved Paleolithic grunting age, and so we didn't even have an election properly communicated and efficiently explained.
Mm-hmm.
It was aborted. It was an election that didn't communicate to the people.
Mm-hmm.
It just, by executive fiat, said this is what's happening.
So where
that's
are we
Paleolithic.
Now?
And what's happened over the last 7 years, more and more, the media has, the Android meme has allowed people to create their own content. That's YouTube. I now am an editor, a broadcaster, a receiver, a transmitter. I'm everything that CBS used to be, or NBC.
Mm-hmm.
I am my own self. So that comes in 2005, 2006. Because it's shrinking and disappearing, the only way it can remain any kind of seductive influence is to give you everything, which I just read in that article. Google's going to give you, as an agent of the
abundance in a certain sense?
Abundance of interactivity so that you feel you're in total control of your information.
And that abundance of interactivity will relate back to the material world?
No.
And the political
no.
organization?
No. It'll be like quantum particles. There's no materiality
well, how
there.
How is that going to affect the lives of citizens aboard spaceship or
okay.
in an ecological
We're
context?
Seeing it today in this election.
Yeah.
So when user-generated media, symbolized by MySpace, talk about solipsism, MySpace,
Facebook
yeah. and YouTube.
Yeah, it's amazing so many people sign on to those things.
That's right. Well, it's a new form of Big Brother in the sense that all these kids sign on and then they're monitored. But they don't care about their private chemical body identity, so it's not an issue.
Yeah, you got that
it's
on
not
the
an
part
issue.
Of the youth. They don't care
yeah,
the same way Mr.
They,
Bush
because they,
care.
What they do care about is their TV and chip body. That's what they care about. They have to create their MySpace and they have to create their proper design. That's them more than what they're wearing or who they're relating to in their chemical body. So here we have this situation where we have the religious ritual of an American presidential election. It's a religious ritual based on the printing press. The United States is the only the only company in the world built on the printing press. Alone. That's what brought it in.
Yeah,
Ben Franklin.
Phonetic alphabet.
Right. And the printing
press. Printing press or phonetic alphabet?
Well, phonetic alphabet is the content.
Yeah.
The printing press mass produces. It's the
yeah.
first mass medium. So well, Ben Franklin brings in the American Revolution, built on respecting each person's opinion and informed nature in relation to a print newspaper environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's the United States, 1780s and into the 1800s. Every 4 years, replay that situation where the chemical body, the American chemical body, is honored by saying your opinion counts.
Explain a chemical body. What do you That's mean?
That's what we call our physical body. Western science dominates the interpretation of this physical body, so that's chemistry over the last 150 years. We're juggling four bodies. The chemical body or physical body, the TV body, the chip body, and then the spiritual body or the astral body, which is just the religious impulse that there's more than this world.
Okay.
You have to have a collective expression of these four bodies in the media during an election. So what do you have? You have the anthropomorphic physical, the Paleolithic body demands its issues. What are they? Racial, gender, corporatist, political, and military. So
yeah.
how do the candidates resonate with that?
Mm-hmm.
Obama, through his TV image, represents the racial issues in this election.
Mm-hmm.
Racial legacy, racial future, okay? Mm-hmm. The gender issue, represented by Hillary. Now, those two images are more in response to the TV landscape, all right?
Mm.
But we have a computer and chip body landscape. So who would be a representative of the corporatist impulse?
No.
Mr. Bloomberg. You remember, corporatist was Mussolini's term for fascism.
Mm-hmm.
So Bloomberg represents the efficient corporate manager. So the issue of corporatism, the efficient management of all these big media conglomerates, it will be represented by Bloomberg. Now, the Internet and the chip landscape, it flows around all this stuff. The blogosphere, any individual can hook themselves up and pontificate and express and create videos and all this stuff. It's an incredibly a democratic medium.
Yeah.
Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
So what is going to reflect that aspect of our election, the effect of the internet and YouTube, and the autonomy and freedom that the users get from that. That's going to be Ron Paul. Ron Paul has been trying to show the irrelevance of the TV issues of Obama and Hillary. The point is that he's there saying, we need to retrieve the Constitution, get rid of the Federal Reserve and the IRS, all these old Gutenberg money environments. And unfortunately, that image, that topic, that content does not communicate. So he doesn't get much effect in the audience, in the general audience. I don't even know what he's talking about. But he's stressing the political. What is the rights of the individual today in a super democratic environment caused by the internet? The old control by the Federal Reserve and the IRS, that should be diminished. The fifth part is the military, protecting our tribe and all that. And that's obviously McCain. He represents the Pentagon. But he doesn't represent the TV body, the computer body, or the internet. He represents the future. Because future technologies come out of the Pentagon. It's due to
the
funding.
They always have.
They always have. They're the ones working on the latest stuff in their black box projects.
The amount of the gross domestic product given over to the military has decreased greatly.
Yeah, but then there's the secret funding, the black box projects.
Well,
remember,
that.
The day before September 11th, the military and the Pentagon announced they lost $1.3 trillion. Now, I want to tell you, Harold, since we're coming into the deadline I disbanded the Secret Council 10 in late 80s by 1990.
Spock-like.
But now, the world is a totally different place from, 27, 28 years ago. It's now a new situation. So I've reconvened the Secret Council 10.
You have called it back in session.
Yeah. We have quadrillions of dollars, if you want to call them dollars. We have quadrillions, and we're orchestrating this situation, and we're going to bring in a new reality over the next 5 years. Frank Zappa's birthday, December 21st, 2012.
Is that going to be it? Frank Zappa's birthday?
That'll be locked down, Bob Rule.
So,
which it sounds megalomaniac, but it's you know me. I'm not a megalomaniac.
No, you're not.
It sounds absurd.
What's making the...
This possible? As the conflict between these different landscapes, Ron Paul, he's nowhere on the scene. He's going to form an independent party candidacy. He's going to regenerate himself. And you're interesting, you're going to have two independent parties. They may be negotiating right now, Bloomberg and Ron Paul, what they're going to do. Because you would have a split independent movement, two different candidates. But anyways, there's going to have to be a replay of the Ross Perot phenomenon or the Ralph Nader phenomenon. All right? So as that unfolds over the next 8 months, because pretty well...
In this election cycle.
Yeah, it's going to happen in the next 8 months. This chaos is going to surface because the world economy is now realized to have been evaporated. You know, the Federal Reserve by 2011 is going to base its wealth not on its reserves, gold reserves. It's going to base it on nothing. This has been announced.
Okay, you know
what that nothing is? Press conferences. Bernanke can come out and he can say, Wall Street having a little problem, we'll bring down the little Fed rate a little bit.
He just did a couple of times.
And he also infuses funds into Wall Street. And that's traditionally, constitutionally, not the Federal Reserve's function. They don't have any money. They're just a switching mechanism for the central bank networks, for the overnight rate and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So where do they get the money to put it in? They say they have the money. They say they gave it to Wall Street. No one can track this. And Wall Street goes up. But then it goes back down 2 days later. Then it goes back up. Now, we can't have a nation in this global tactile environment. You can't have a nation. You can't have a world economy. You can't have one thing or another. It's all interplayed. It's all paramedia.
It's a seamless
web. Yeah. And our media environments have come to this point that that's the weather we're going to experience.
You can get to learn a lot about the weather.
Well, we've got about a minute. Let me explain the global warming problem.
Got 1 minute.
Yeah. Global warming. It is due to technology taking over first nature, merging with it, that nature now is speeding up like technology is, and it does its four seasons, the 12-month seasons, in 3 months. So if you have the summer happening in the winter, that's because it's sped over rapidly. The 12-month cycle happens in 3 months.
Are you optimistic?
So the mixture of the weather is not because the planet's getting hotter. It's because it's responding to the speed-up we've imposed on it.
Okay, well,
that's the secret.
Okay, I hope we got all that down, and I hope you got it all there. Bob, thanks for coming in.
Thank you again, Harold.